Molotov cocktail, but I always like to correct it. I threw the second one. I did not throw the first one.
First of all, that comment was probably tongue-in-cheek. Second of all, it's not certain that Molotov cocktails were thrown at all. Regardless of what Rivera and Johnson did at Stonewall, their impact on the trans and gay movements can't be overstated.
When I see people saying Marsha and Sylvia were the ones who threw the first bricks, I want to remember them in a way that feels honest, because their legacies extend far beyond that night.
However, there was a gender nonconforming person that several witnesses credit with catalyzing Stonewall.
She was very butch and she was tough, and the police were being rough with her, and she was really fighting back.
We have four independent accounts who say that this woman's fight with the police is what tipped the scales and set it all off.
She called out to the crowd, "What are you doing? Why are you just standing there? Why don't you do something?"
Some people say that woman was Stormy DeLarvier, a lesbian who worked as a bouncer at the time. DeLarvier sometimes took credit and sometimes denied her role, but so far there's been no conclusive proof of who exactly that butch woman at Stonewall was.
Hey Boston, you're listening to 91.5 WMFO in Hartford.
So won't you hurry? Come on, boy, see about me.
Oh, see about me.
See about you, baby.
Oh, see about me.
Don't you know you're queen?
And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Judy Garland. Yes.
Judy Garland's funeral took place at Campbell's Funeral Home on the afternoon before the events at Stonewall.
The patrons of the Stonewall used their grief over Judy's death to rise up and fight back.
But were the two events related?
The worst question that people ask about Stonewall is whether it was caused by the death of Judy Garland.
If one looks at the accounts published in 1969, there's only one account that mentioned Stonewall and Judy Garland, and that was written by a right-wing columnist to mock the movement.
You're trivializing our anger and oppression of 2,000 years to a singer.
So I went to Judy Garland's room. And a lot of Stonewall Queens did.
Oh, it was like Noah's Ark. All of Judy's fans. God bless Judy Garland. But no, she was not the cause of the Stonewall riot. No.
walls down, building your girl's second story, ripping all your floors out.
Let's talk about that brick. One of the most derided representations of the first brick came from the 2015 movie Stonewall.
Gay power!
All anyone wants to talk about is who threw the first brick.
Who threw the first brick?
People claiming I threw the first brick.
First off, it asks, were bricks thrown?
Where were those bricks found?
Apparently there was a construction site that had a pile of bricks.
I heard that last week. Did they show you a picture of that construction site?
It's possible they were pulling rocks from the street. I haven't determined where that would have been unless it was in the park. If there's a tree pit, they're usually lined with something.
Around this tree, there were these stones. I pulled up the stones. I know I threw stones. I don't know if I threw a brick. I doubt it. I think I was a stones man.
So objects were thrown that may or may not have been bricks.
Her name was the
they fell in love. His name was Rico. He wore a diamond. He was escorted to his chair. He saw Lola dancing there, and when she finished, he called her over. But Rico went a bit too far. Tony sailed across the bar, and then the punches flew, and chairs were smashed in two. There was blood and a single gunshot, but just who shot who at the Copa? Copacabana, the hottest spot north of Havana. Here at the Copa, Copacabana, music and passion were always the fashion at the Copa. She lost her love. Her name is Lola, she was a showgirl, but that was 30 years ago when they used to have a show. Now it's a disco, but not for Lola. Still in the dress she used to wear, faded feathers in her hair, she sits there so refined and drinks herself half blind. She lost her youth and she lost her Tony, now she's lost her mind at the Copa, Copacabana.
We are the dreamers of dreams.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to the extended edition of Songs from the Squid Pod. I am your host, Savoir Faire, and if you are just joining us here, this is a special two-hour show tonight here honoring the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall riots that took place exactly 50 years ago today, June 28th, 1969. Got an all LGBTQ lineup here going for you. And again, if you're late, you can always find the archived versions and playlists on the show, the station's website at WMFO.org. Just click on the schedule link and look for Songs from the Squid Pod. Got about just over a half an hour here to go, but try to cram as much as we can in. So we started that last set off with Holland. That's first openly gay K-pop singer out of Korea there. And we heard his track I'm Not Afraid from 2018. Perfume Genius. That's the stage name for Seattle-based singer-songwriter Mike Hedreas. And we heard Queen off of his 2014 release, Too Bright. Teddy Hart. I'm not really sure how to pronounce this because it's Teddy, and then it's got the less than sign and the three, but trying to make a heart. Actual name, Teddy Geiger. And we heard I Was in a Cult from her 2018 release, Liliana. Hayley Kiyoko was in there with Girls Like Girls. That's off of her 2015 release, This Side of Paris. Barry Manilow gave us the classic Copacabana from his 1978 release, Even Now. And we wrapped it up there with Sylvester and You Make Me Feel Mighty Real, also from 1978. How about that? All right. And of course, you know, if you are just joining us here or joining at some other point other than the beginning of the show, we've been listening to little excerpts from video journalist and New York Times contributor Shane O'Neill's historical piece that he did for the Times video channel on YouTube titled The Stonewall You Know Is a Myth and That's Okay. In it, he gathers people who were present at the Stonewall Inn that night and LGBTQ historians and writers to discuss that evening. And we've been kind of playing little cuts there from throughout the show. And we're going to leave you with the finale of that piece here. And if you're interested in checking out the entire video, there are links to the site, the YouTube site there, on in my show's playlist there, which, again, you can find on the station's website at WMFO.org and click on the schedule link. All right, let's dive back into it here, shall we?
All right, so we've worked out a framework for what happened at Stonewall that many people can maybe mostly agree on. But why does this even matter? Why are we nitpicking this to death? Because when we talk about what happened at Stonewall 50 years ago, we're also talking about issues the LGBT community is still wrestling with today, namely transphobia and racism.
There's one graphic I'm thinking about in particular, trans women of color throwing bricks at cops gave me the right to get married. I think a lot of people cling on to these narratives because trans women of color are often already sidelined.
I mean, there were some individual people of color, but it was not a group of trans people of color who started the writing. If people start telling stories not as they were, but as they would like them to be, That procedure can be used by anybody for any purpose. So I think that we need to be consistent in the truth.
If we are demanding that our history be respected, then we have to respect it ourselves. You have to apply the same criteria to our history, that it be worthwhile, that it be accurate, that it be well researched. We should recognize our warts as well as our flowers, as it were.
I mean, I think historical erasure is real. How do we tell a history of something when our lives aren't in archives? Speculative fiction and historically informed fiction, to me, are ways to answer that question. And it doesn't have to be true to be meaningful.
Stonewall was a messy evening. LGBT histories are very messy. I think naming that doesn't take away from the importance of what happened.
I don't think anyone threw the first brick at Stonewall.
And at this point, I don't care who threw the first brick. Oh, I don't think it matters. And it doesn't matter.
Like, it doesn't matter. It's okay that we don't know.
If it wasn't a brick, it was a rock. If it wasn't a rock, it was a purse. If it wasn't a purse, it was a shoe. If it wasn't a shoe, it was a glass. If it wasn't a glass, it was a dirty look. It was all of those things. It wasn't just that day, it was days before, and it was many years after.
It's 50 years later, and we still can't agree on exactly what happened that night. But that's all right. Stonewall was about people reclaiming their own narratives from those that told them they were sick or pitiful or didn't even exist. Part of telling your own story means living openly and partying at parades, but it also means contending with other people's versions of that story, even if theirs doesn't match perfectly with yours. As Chrysanthemum Tran said, that can be messy, and that's okay. I love a messy party.
Yeah.
know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. I know I'm talented. And I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, 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 bitch. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning. Bitch, I know I'm stunning. I know I'm stunning.
Back, 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 back to back.
Quotes from things you've said. Mm-hmm. Here's something. Every time I bat an eyelash, it's a political act.
Yeah, it is. You know, because anytime anybody does what their dream is or do what's in their heart, that's the most political thing you could do. You know, I can't change the world, but I can change myself, and I can influence the world by what I do, you know? So it's the most political thing you could do is when you do your own thing, okay? It's true. It's very true. It's the most powerful thing, too. You know, because when you're in drag, when you become the image of your own imagination, it's the most powerful thing you could ever do, you know, because ain't no stopping, you know, in my mind's eye, I always been a superstar, you know, right. And nobody couldn't tell me no different, you right. know what I mean? Right. So if you believe it, then they'll believe it, they'll buy it.
Once upon a time, there was a little black girl in the Brewster Projects of Detroit, Michigan. At 15, she was spotted by an Ebony Fashion Fair talent scout, and her modeling career took off.
You better work.
Work, turn to the left, work.
and I won't go through all the names, there seems to be like either a resurgence of drag or like this freedom that's going on now, people coming out and being themselves. Hallelujah. What's going on?
Hallelujah. Well, you know, during the 80s, it was colorless, you know, with the Reagan regime and all that stuff. And now people are busting out. You know, the pendulum swung so far to the right, mm-hmm. it's going to come crashing back to the left, okay? So I think that's what's happening. And hallelujah, the children who come see my shows, you know, they're gay, straight, everybody, and they dress up because they've never experienced glamour. And with supermodel and everything, you know, the supermodels give us the glamour. Hollywood used to give us glamour with Audrey Hepburn, Marilyn Monroe, all that. But now we get it from Naomi and Christy and all that. Yeah. But I want to bring up, too, about my family and stuff is that I'm so proud that I can share this with my family. So many children can't go home, and some kids, you know, can't go home because their family won't accept them. And hopefully by me coming out and being who I am, I could shed some light on what the lifestyle is like, which is just like anybody else, like I said, you know.
Alrighty, folks, that's going to do it for me tonight. Hope you enjoyed this special two-hour edition of Songs from the Squid Pod, where we look back at the last 50 years of the gay rights movement with interviews, sound bites, and, of course, music as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Stonewall Riots. If you joined the show late and want to listen to it in its entirety and or check out the playlist, you can always find them both on the station's website at WMFO.org and click on the schedule link and then click on the show Songs from the Squid Pod and all will be revealed. You also find the links to the New York Times video channel on YouTube there if you're interested in catching Shane O'Neill's piece that he did for the Times there, entitled The Stonewall You Know Is a Myth, and That's Okay. I hope you enjoyed. We featured like seven little excerpts there throughout the show this evening, but you can get the whole thing on YouTube. All right, let's talk about what we've been listening to here before we wrap it up. Started off that last set with George Michael and Fast Love Part 1 from his 1996 release Older. Adam Joseph was in there with Facts Are Facts featuring Monique Hart. It's off of his self-released Rue Mixed The Bitch Tracks from 2019. It came out back in May there, so very recent. Heard a little excerpt from RuPaul's interview with Arsenio Hall back in 1993. And then, of course, we heard from RuPaul and his classic supermodel, You Better Work, from 1993. Graceful Exit was in there with Entrance. That's off of their 2011 release, their Resolve Disco. Not a member of the LGBTQ community, as far as I know, but I think the song is a great song to sashay to. And the band's name, Graceful Exit, made it for an appropriate selection to the end of the show. You're currently listening to Purple Disco Machine and Shake It from the compilation there, Defected Croatia 2017. Alrighty, be sure to join me here next Friday at 10 p.m. for our usually scheduled programming as we look back at the 80s. Have a great weekend, everyone.
It's a medical breakthrough. Doctors are prescribing something new to help prevent cancer and improve survival rates. But you don't get it filled at the pharmacy. The answer is as close as your local supermarket. That's right. Research has shown that a diet rich in fruits, vegetables, beans, whole grains, and other high-fiber vegetarian foods protects against cancer and can even help survival rates. Side effects of a vegetarian diet include increased energy, lower cholesterol levels, and better overall health. And with the right recipes, a high-fiber vegetarian diet can be a delicious way to help shed those unwanted pounds. So, stock up today. For a free nutrition booklet filled with delicious cancer-fighting recipes, visit cancerproject.org or call 866-906-WELL. That's 866-906-WELL. This message brought to you by the Cancer Project, committed to preventing cancer and improving survival.
Hi, this is Mary Wilson of The Supremes. And honey, I am up close with Savoir Faire on 91.5 WMFO.